Hello and welcome to the newly theme songed True Bill LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch, and with me as always is Eric Steven. Eric, how are you doing?
Oh man, what a theme song that was.
So Eric actually hasn't heard the theme song.
What are you talking about? It sounded great.
I don't like lying to our viewers, so.
You're breaking the fourth wall. Or is it like the third wall since we're only audio? I don't even know. Are there really walls? Yeah, who knows?
So
that's an existential question.
Talking about last week in Dodgerville, Dodgertown, you titled your weekend review this week kind of taking care of business, I think.
Uh-huh.
A little BTO reference.
I was more a real big fan of Jim Belushi.
But that's kind of how it felt like, right? With a team with this history, with this roster, with this payroll, you kind of expect them to win just every series, 2-1 at least. And it was done in the way you would expect. Kershaw was great. The lineup was mostly great. Couple of more sour notes. And putting together a week just enough to kind of get things done.
Yeah, and it was one of those, like, two... There was sort of the added thing of the two division rivals who, like, won the offseason, you know, who, like, are primed to compete. You know, I still contend that the Giants are more so likely to contend than the Diamondbacks are, but the fact that they beat both of them each in you know, 2-1, that helped. You know, obviously it helps in the division. It's one of those, like, I can't remember, like, last year or the year before, they were kind of like slow and steady. I know the Giants were hot and you just sort of waited for them to cool off. Like, you know, obviously if the Giants continue to play like a 700 pace or whatever, they're just going to run away with the division. That's obvious. But the Dodgers just, like, you know, got to their 90 wins, like, almost how you'd expect. Like, you just keep churning out the wins. There wasn't like a super hot streak. I don't know how that's going to play out this year, but it's so far they're just sort of churning along. You know, like, they won 3 out of 4 series. They obviously lost the series in San Francisco, but yeah, so far, you know, it's been going okay. You know, like, there's been ups and downs. The one thing I do sort of like about it is the offense has been fairly good. Like, even I know they got to the hot start. They've had their ups and downs, but, like, even the game they had a really bad pitching performance from Scott Kazmir, who only went 4 innings. They still had a chance to win that game late, or at least tie it. So I think that, you know, it's hard to sort of count them out of many games, you know, unless they get fall behind early. But there are a lot of things to like, especially given all the sort of injuries they've been dealing with.
Divisional play the entire time until today. We're actually recording this in the middle of the first, and that's all I'll say because we're not allowed to broadcast or disseminate the going-ons in a baseball game. But we're recording in the middle of the first non-NL West game the Dodgers are participating in, and you kind of went over the division. Is this kind of how you think it's going to keep going? In terms of Giants on top, Arizona kind of looking like kind of like they were last year.
Yeah, I think Arizona's probably better. Like, they're a better than 500 team, I think. It depends on, I guess, if they could maybe get a couple injuries and not be as good. But they're probably going to hang around. But I do think the Giants are going to be really good. Johnny Cueto looked pretty great. I know the Dodgers got 5 runs on him the first time they saw him in the first inning, but he kind of, outside of that inning, he's been pretty fantastic so far. He's gone at least 7 innings in all 3 starts, including that game. So it tells you kind of, you know, he's like a true, like, ace level pitcher when he's healthy. And if he's anywhere close to that, they're going to be formidable. And then same thing with Jeff Samardzija, not an ace, but a true actual, like, innings horse. And he's going to help them out, because I think the one problem that the Giants might have this year is the bullpen. But having their starters go as deep as they're capable of, that's going to help their bullpen this year. So I do think they're going to be, and with that offense, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with all year. So I do think they're going to be, you know, sort of hanging around with the Dodgers all year.
So continuing that, we talked about sort of the ups being in the Dodgers lineup so far, being in the lineup and the offense kind of continuing to produce, being as deep as we were hoping and expecting it to be. Do you see any signs of permanent trouble with sort of the more down spots, thinking of the starter pitchers not named Clayton Kershaw or Kenta Maeda? The bullpen recovered a little bit after that rough look in San Francisco. And then I guess really the only hitter that, you know, has rightful concern raised about him is Jock Peterson. Do you think these things are going to continue, or are you going to look up?
No, I think there's enough like surrounding like the hitters to where they have enough to sort of deal with it. Like, you know, Jock Peterson, you know, he's always going to, aesthetically, it's never going to look good because he's going to strike out a lot. So he's always going to get, even when he's going relatively well, like he's not doing so bad, people are going to think he's doing worse just because of the strikeouts, I think. Although that said, he had two really bad at-bats on Saturday. And it, you know, kind of, he was in a little bit of a slump, but like I said, it's in the early going to where, like, he started the game with like, I think an OPS of around 800 or something. And, you know, after the game, it was like 720. So it's where it's so early at the people were at, they are talking on Twitter and in the comment section about, you know, when are they going to send Jock down? And it gets a little much early in the season, but, and then of course he hits a home run on Sunday. It's a work in progress. You know, he's going to have his ups and downs. But it's just a matter of like, you know, him sort of working out. But I think if it gets to the point where he's still struggling, I think they have, you know, they're going to just try other people. They're going to put Kike in center, or they're going to have Trace Thompson play out there every once in a while. I think they'll figure it out, you know, like either he figures it out or they'll put someone out there who does. I mean, he's going to get a pretty decent size rope. But it's not something that I'm like, I think it's going to anchor and weigh down the, you know, the sort of pace of the offense. I think they have enough sort of interchangeable parts in other places where they can sort of make up for any sort of deficiency there. Or they could hit well enough to carry him while keeping his defense in there, you know, if he continues to struggle. Because he is, by all accounts, still working with the hitting coaches and progressing that way. And Dave Roberts said the other day, you know, as long as he's putting in the work he's going to put in, the results are going to come. And he said that right before he hit the home run. So maybe we should just talk to Dave Roberts about Jock every day before the game. And that's the way to get him out of whatever, any sort of slump he'll ever be in. So
what about Casimir and Wood, I guess, are the two pitchers that have looked sort of not, you know, like, what are we going to do? I'm not sounding the emergency bell, sure. But they also haven't looked particularly good.
Yeah, they've had their ups and downs, like both of them. Honestly, not terribly worried about either one. Like, they're going to be what they are, I think. They're going to have occasional good starts, occasional bad starts. They're going to be sort of mid-rotation guys. Kenta Maeda has been fantastic to date. Obviously, he's given up one run in 19 innings. He's going to be your sort of number two right now until they, you know, they figure out the rest after that. And then, you know, Ross Stripling is that's where you sort of, we haven't seen like three bad starts in a row or something by the group. You know, Stripling's been good both times out. He goes again on Wednesday this week. So it's a matter of, can they withstand? That was the thing with like having Kershaw and Greinke, is you're not going to go through many losing streaks because odds are at least one of those guys is going to be really, really good in his start, and in most cases both are. But now you have a case where, you know, once you get past Kershaw, you have four semi-question marks, and that's where you could get into a slump where you get into a bit of a long losing streak. But we haven't seen that yet. The bullpen had some down parts, but they go into the road trip with like a 14-inning scoreless streak. So the general overall numbers are good, and I think, you know, people were overreacting a little bit to like Chris Hatcher say. His issue is almost always pitch mix or location. He was having some trouble with location, and he seemed to solve that. He did have a baby last week as well. And he's been really good in the two games since. You never know if someone's distracted, you know, maybe in the couple days before that, but I don't want to make that excuse for him because he certainly did not. You never know what these guys are sort of going through if they don't necessarily say it ahead of time. They don't want to make excuses either. I think overall the bullpen's been generally is going to be generally fine. They're not going to be lights out outside of, say, Kenley Jansen, but that's sort of what they are, you know, like for now. And then I think what you're going to see is later in the season, either they try to make a move to add someone to the bullpen, or that could include adding like Frankie Montas when he's back from his foot injury, some of the other younger prospects if they're not going to start, maybe a Jarrell Cotton, maybe like Ross Stripling. I think they mentioned today that because of his innings limit later in the season, he may relieve. That may not be in the Dodger bullpen, it may be in AAA just because he's hitting an innings limit. But if he's pitching well enough, you know, he might be in the majors. Who knows? So they still have a lot of options, I think. And what we're going to see as the season goes on, they're going to probably plug in a lot of guys going forward. They've also signed a number of veteran guys, Sean Burnett, Joe Thatcher, the two lefties. So if they want to mix one of those guys in, that might happen too. And we'll see. So they have a number of options, I think.
On the subject of semi-question marks, Otero Baines, is that what we're going to call him? Clayton Kershaw and the Otero Baines. So left field, Howie Kendrick's starting there today. Again, I'm skirting the line here between talking about a live baseball game, but clearly not his primary position, to say the least.
Yeah.
Do you think Carl Crawford is looking, I think he's going to Oklahoma City later this week. Is this just they're going to just scrap by throwing whoever they can in there until at the very least Carl is ready back, or is a more permanent solution going to be necessary?
I think you're going to see, they're scrambling now till sort of Crawford gets back, and then Vince, like, it's taking a little bit longer. He's not recovering as quickly as Crawford. They both had the lower back pain or tightness, I guess. Crawford's due back Sunday. They're going to probably activate him the last day of the road trip in Colorado, but we'll see. He's supposed to play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday with Oklahoma City, and then have Saturday off, and then probably be activated Sunday. But yeah, I think one of the sort of weird aspects of the season, like this whole, it's always been kind of weird. Like the whole fact that they actually brought Howie Kendrick back in the first place was really unexpected and odd. And then I know the day it happened around FanFest when Kendrick signed, it wasn't quite official yet, but everyone was talking about it, which they never do till things become official. So you knew it was going to happen. But like Dave Roberts said, yeah, we talked to him. He's in the mix for like third base and left field too. We're like, what? Like, he's a second baseman. And then sure enough, like within like the first week of him actually playing games, he played at both third base and left field. Third base, he had only played in 2006 with the Angels. And then left field, he actually got a little bit of an extended run in 2011. He started 20 games, and I think he played like 26 games total. Mixing in a couple non-starts in like 2012, 2013, but he really hasn't played it for a while. So it was a matter of like him sort of branching out and playing these new positions. So yeah, that's been sort of the weird highlight, but that's also been made possible by sort of the Chase Utley rejuvenation machine looking actually good at second and been playing most of the game. So as long as this is one of those you chalk it up as a good problem to have. Kendrick hasn't hit yet, really, but I expect that to happen. You know, he's not going to he's just started. He's like 4-for-19 or something. So we're just, like I said, super early going. You just take all these numbers with a grain of salt. But, having a productive Chase Utley, a productive Howie Kendrick, that's a good – you figure out places for them to play. I don't think it's going to be an issue going forward. But I do think when Crawford gets back, especially until Van Slyke gets back, I think Kendrick's still going to see some time out there. Kike's probably going to see some time either out there or one of those guys will mix in, giving Utley a day off, giving Turner a day off at third. So they'll be creative, I think.
Anything else you want to talk about either the week we had or the week ahead? We've got, like you said, a road trip, Atlanta for the first half, Colorado on the back half.
I'm trying to think. They face all six, sort of playing into that, what we were just talking about, the lineup. They face all six right-handers this week. So not a lot of platoon-type things, but I think they're going to rest more guys. There's two situations where they go day game after night game, including a weird 9 o'clock Pacific start on Thursday, which is unholy. So you'll probably see some guys getting days off on those, you know, built around those days. And then they come back home for a full week homestand next week, including four games with the Marlins, and Don Mattingly sort of returned to L.A., so that'll be interesting. But, yeah, other than that, I'm anxious to get to our next segments.
You have a segment for me that you've thinly veiled, but we're gonna ask you a bunch of basketball questions first.
Sweet.
We're going through a book, The Best Bar Trivia Book Ever by Michael O'Neill. You got through baseball last week. NBA playoffs have started. So it's fitting that we're going to be switching to basketball.
Just so you know, I'm humming in my head the John Tesh NBA and NBC theme. So I don't know if we have the rights to use it, but I'm humming it in my head.
Definitely don't. I'm not paying for that.
Yeah.
And again, we're going to start easy and get a little harder as we go on. And we're stopping when you get one wrong, probably. Unless you get the first one wrong, then maybe we'll keep going.
We pause for embarrassment, and then
who is
we keep going.
The only NBA player to win the MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and Finals MVP award in the same year?
In the same year? Holy crap. And Finals MVP. That's probably Jordan.
Try again.
Cool. let's see. Finals MVP. I don't say anything.
You're in the right era. I'll give you that hint.
Oh, then Akeem.
There you go. Yeah. We're ignoring your first round answer. Who holds the record for most seasons leading the NBA in scoring?
It sucks because I think I want to say Jordan, but I thought like Wilt did it like more, but now I'm trying to think because the end of his career, I want to say it's like Jordan 8, Wilt 7 or something. So I'll go Jordan.
Jordan it is. I was going to laugh if you talked yourself out of that.
Yeah.
Who is the only NBA MVP to be named Coach of the Year and Executive of the Year?
Wait, the only NBA MVP to do that?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Oh, it has to be Larry Bird.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hick from
I was going to say Isaiah Thomas, and then I just started laughing. he's like ran everything into the ground as an executive. And
so my family used to do their reunions in French Lick. It was
really
felt imbued with
ever,
the power of 33.
I've heard like stories like in the 80s, like when he was still like at his peak, he'd still be like mowing the lawn on the riding mower, and people could like come by and watch him do that. that's amazing fandom right there. So
I thought I was going to be going for basketball for longer, but it actually is going to switch to hockey. So you ready for that?
Oh man, one question. Yeah.
Let's see which one of these. Who was the youngest player to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame? I'll give you a year if you need it.
Actually, I have a guess, but give me the year.
The year is 1979.
Oh, then I'm glad that's not it. Oh, wait. No, 1979. I don't.
The same player won the Norris Trophy. That's best defensive hockey player. Every year from 68 to 75.
Oh, and then Bobby Orr.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I was going to say, like, never mind.
Who is the only player in any professional sport to captain two different teams to a championship win?
That's got to be Messier.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've got one more. If you get through, you got through all of the sections. And
I win $1 million. Yay!
Three people have been inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach.
Do I have to name them?
You do. That's yeah. Believe it or not, that is. Just a little fact. Moving on.
Just name one or something. Well, okay. So Lenny Wilkins.
Yep.
Wait, and Naismith is. I forget. There's just one Basketball Hall of Fame, right? There's not. It's not pro. It's pro and college.
I think there is a. I do not know. I have a guess, but I'll hold that to myself. I've definitely had to look this up before.
Okay, so I'm going to wait to answer who I think is the second one last, but I'm trying to think of who the third one is now. Okay, so Hall of Famer, player and coach, man. Well, okay, I'll scrap that thought and just say John Wooden is my other guess.
Yep.
And, Bill Sharman.
Boom, well done.
Yeah.
You screwed up Hakeem and then you just got caught fire.
Yeah.
The Alex Wood of trivia.
You could say that, in a sense, my original answer was a sort of a dream shake, and then I went on from there.
So what is this segment that you've hyped so gallantly?
Okay, so I have a new segment we're going to introduce. It's basically it's a complete rip, or sort of a complete ripoff of our good friends at Effectively Wild, the Baseball Perspectives podcast. They are actually sponsored by Baseball Reference Play Index. We are not, but it's like the most wonderful. Yeah, exactly. So the Play Index, if you don't know, it's the most wonderful research tool you could possibly have. I use it almost literally every day. There you could search for, different seasons by players, different games, different events that happened. If you get down to the nitty gritty, there's all sorts of things you could search for. So what I want to try to do every week, and this might involve in the future, taking suggestions from the audience as to different things you want us to look up. They'd like to keep them Dodger related. So, in most cases when we take questions, we don't really care if they're Dodger related or not. This one is probably better if we keep it Dodger related. But so I came up with the first one since I started it sort of cold here. And it's basically just a series of things I looked up. The Dodgers are playing at Turner Field, which is in its 20th and final season. It's a relatively young stadium to go by the wayside. The Braves are moving into a new park in Cobb County next year. So this series is the final three games the Dodgers will have played there. So they're 29-40 all time at Turner Field for the most part. The Braves, in the 90s and early 2000s were a pretty awesome team. So it's understandable the Dodgers had an under 500 record against them. 30-41 if you count the split two games, the first two games of the 2013 NLDS. So what I did, I looked up a few things on the Play Index using the player split finder, and I searched by ballpark for the last 19 years. What I did was various Dodgers leaders at Turner Field. So I wanted to see if you could name them. I actually tweeted one earlier. I'm not sure if you saw the tweet, but I'm gonna go to that one first.
I did not see the tweet.
Okay. So who, from 1997 to 2015, the 19-year stretch, who has the most wins as a Dodger at Turner Field?
I'll go chalk Clayton Kershaw.
Okay, now I have to tell you this: Clayton Kershaw does have one win, but I forgot to mention this is regular season only. His win is in the postseason. He before this series, he's made one regular season start way back in 2011. And then one postseason start against him, and that's it. So he is not it.
I was thinking about this when I saw that was the Braves, that for whatever reason, the series that have taken place in Turner Field, I remember almost none of them. And it may be the time difference just meant I was in school during them and I wasn't watching. But whereas most of the I have fond or at least some memories of the visiting stadiums, just not much in Atlanta.
Post shoulder surgery, Jason Schmidt has a win at Turner Field in a game, and if I remember correctly, in that same series, he got a pinch hit as a hitter, in a different game during that series. So, but anyway, so this list is amazing. I'll tell you in the 19 years, the leading Dodgers winner.
How many wins is the leader?
Three.
So my second guess, and then I'll be done, is Derek Lowe.
Derek Lowe. I'm looking. Three starts, 1-1. So
okay. All right.
Not there. He actually pitched pretty well, 2.95 ERA, 18 in the third inning, so lasted decently. The leader, Chan Ho Park. Right? So it captured two eras of Chan Ho
Park. I was about to say, was it both eras or not?
Yeah. Well, actually, in the early part was he got five of his starts were the early Chan Ho Park and then one relief appearance.
Did he get a win in the relief appearance?
That's a good question. I actually didn't look that part. I'll look it up as we're talking. But yeah, so he's 3-1 with a 3.63 ERA in the six games. But yeah, it was he was back with the Dodgers in 2008. So I'm looking up right now when he went when he pitched at Turner Field that year, because that man, that's amazing if he got one of the wins as a reliever, because that would be just cherry on top. Because it would have, that means he would have broken the tie with the, well, maybe not broken the tie, but put himself in the clubhouse ahead, well ahead of, he did not get the win as a reliever. So he had these three wins banked as a starter in the early days of Turner Field, and then just, he was the early clubhouse leader and then never got caught. So there's three people tied with two wins. I'll give you one hint. That's one starter and two relievers. I'll go, you know what? I take that back. There's one starter, one reliever, and one guy who was both a starter and a reliever with the Dodgers during this period.
Jeff Weaver?
Jeff Weaver is the man. He won both of his games, and they were both starts. So,
he is the starter reliever, but he did get both.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's 2-0. The other two, one was. Do you have other guesses, or do you want me to tell you?
If you have a hint, go ahead. Otherwise, no. I'll Guillermo Mota.
No, let's see, the other. The starter was drafted by the Dodgers.
What about the reliever? Well, I think about the starter.
the reliever.
Chad Billingsley?
Yeah, the starter is Chad Billingsley. Okay. 2-1 with a 2.30 ERA. The reliever had multiple stints with the Dodgers. Had kind of amazing staying power, if you think about it. Pretty classic guy. Once I tell you the name.
Yeah, go ahead and tell me.
Giovanni Carrara.
Okay.
2-0.
This guy, Giovanni used to drive me insane as I know it's sad that Baseball Reference doesn't track this, certainly not at least far back. He had to have been the slowest pitcher I can recall in the Dodgers.
Man, yeah. There was
just the amount of time stretching, kind of looking between, maybe he threw it to first.
So the best part about this segment, I think, is that we always tease about putting something in the show notes, and I've actually already done the legwork of making the show notes for these searches. So these actually will be in the show notes, or at least in the at least on the blog post. There's some sort of a character limit sometimes on the show notes on like in iTunes, but when I post it on the site, I will have these in the notes, but I'll go on to some of the other ones. The other one, I'll switch over. Most home runs in the 19 years of Turner Field by a Dodger in Atlanta.
Sean Green.
See, I would have guessed him as well. He is tied for second.
Okay.
With four. The leader only has five. They in all those games they played there, and this person played 26 games in Turner Field as a Dodger.
26 games, it's a lot of games.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this. There's three people tied with Sean Green at four. Then I'll just tell you this. One he played with. One before him and one after him.
Jeez.
That's your hint.
Some hint.
Yeah.
Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield has four in only 16 games. Sean Green only had 17 games. So
yeah, that was definitely a risky guess. But if there was going to be a guy before Sean Green, he was there, as good as I was going
to
guess.
And there's nobody with three. The next, it goes down to two after that. But so we have one guy at five who you haven't guessed, and then one person who I'll give you. Both of these other people at four are both outfielders.
Okay. They're both. What about the guy at five?
The guy at five is not an outfielder.
Adrian Beltre?
No.
Wow.
I'm trying to think. He played 24 games at Turner Field as a Dodger, and he has two home runs.
Jeff Kent.
That's actually a pretty good guess. I'm looking. He did not make the list. He didn't hit a home run in Turner Field as a Dodger.
JD Drew.
Kevin Elster did, but just one. JD Drew did not homer at Turner Field as a Dodger.
That doesn't shock me. What a streaky player.
AJ Ellis did, however, going by initial players.
I'll throw one more guess out there, and then you can tell me. Gonzalez.
Adrian Gonzalez. He has one home run, not counting tonight. He has one home run coming into this series. So technically, he could, if he hits four, he would tie Eric Karros, who's the all-time LA Dodger franchise home run leader. He has five home runs.
I have another guess before we. Before
okay, I, so I, the other so the other two at four.
Andre Ethier.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. I didn't actually look up the most games, but he has 31 games, and he's like the most on this list that I'm seeing. So, he has four. And then the other person, I will tell you, I'll give you the hint of hints. He was traded for Sean Green. You have a guess?
Nope. Give me.
Raul Mondesi.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, that it'll happen. The first year I paid attention to baseball was literally that year. The kid in me was sad that Mike Piazza got traded, but it wasn't actually because I was paying attention to baseball. Just I remember his name when I would go to games. So,
I have quite a few categories here. I'm not going to go through all of them. They will be in the show notes, but I'll go through two more because I thought they were kind of interesting or funny. One is highest OPS by a Dodger at Turner Field. I set the minimum at 10 plate appearances. So it could be someone with like a hot series who is barely around. And looking at this list, that is the case.
Wait, say it again.
Highest OPS at Turner Field by a Dodger, minimum 10 plate appearances. I will tell you, no one, the top six guys on the list has, no one has more than 17 plate appearances. So, if you up the ante to 18 as a minimum, the answer would be Raul Mondesi, who has an 11-14 OPS and 65 plate appearances. But, these other six are higher, including one, who was a lot higher. Do you have any sort of guess who that might be? He played in the last 5 years.
Last 5 years. So that removes that guess.
Who would it have been? Because maybe it's someone
I have this vague memory that Jose Valentin had a really good series at Turner Field, but it might have been Arizona. I might be conflating visiting ballparks.
He's not showing up anywhere on this list, so maybe unless he...
It might have been later. Arizona. And it could just be, you know, I dream of... of Jose Valentin, which is
who doesn't, yeah.
So yeah, I cry uncle.
By the way, that should be the name of this segment. I dream of Jose Valentin, or maybe the name of this episode. So Luis Cruz is the answer.
That was a name I guarantee you wasn't in the top 30. I would have guessed.
If I would have said this name might pop up in your head, would you? So 1463 is his number, OPS 7-for-15 with two home runs and a double and two walks, no strikeouts. So this was like, This was like peak Luis Cruz when he was just hitting everything in sight. Jason Worth, 13-11, is 6 for 11 right behind him. O-Dog, 5 for 10. So they had some good. Justin Turner is fifth at Turner Field as a Dodger. I actually look up his total career at Turner Field because that'd be funny. But maybe I'll do that at the end of the series. Okay, so that was that list. And then the other list I thought was interesting is best ERA by a Dodger at Turner Field. I set the minimum of this at 10 innings, so could be relievers in the mix, could be starters. I could tell you, looking at this list, while there could be relievers, there aren't. At least not prominent relievers with 10 innings. So maybe I should have maybe set the minimum to 5. But there's also a bit of a caveat, kind of goes back to something earlier, but I have something to add to this later. But the person who has the record only made 2 starts. And I already told you in our win conversation, I think, some of the ERAs, so I may have inadvertently given you some of the top people here, but not.
Yeah, so I think the lowest you said you gave me was Chad Billingsley.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he's second at 230. The winner, the leader is 208.
208, yeah. 2 starts.
Yeah.
What era?
Chad Billingsley's era.
I'm just gonna start listing names, so I'll cry uncle again.
Okay, Hiroki Kuroda.
Okay, dang it. So, he was actually one of my guesses for wins. I should have manned up on that.
208 ERA, 0-2 in those 2 starts. So that's pitcher wins, like they're tough. But so the caveat here is that he's at 208. Technically, if we count the postseason, Kershaw's at 193, and he would qualify by having 14 total innings, but he's not. So Kershaw needs to allow one run or fewer in 6 or more innings on his Thursday start, and he will have the best Dodger ERA at Turner Field in the regular season, minimum 10 innings. So that's a little goal for him Thursday. And like I said, I'll put all these up. Play-by-play is frowned upon, but I'll just say that Corey Seager just hit one to the moon.
And you're 30 seconds ahead of – I'm on the LMA TV, so I actually get to watch this right now.
But apparently it was foul.
So, why are you getting my hopes up?
I swear when I saw this, like, it looked fair. Holy crap, he hit that ball.
So, you ready for some questions?
Yeah, that's the segment.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And then
this is going to happen multiple times. You're going to ask like a pre-98 question, and I'm just going to go, uh-oh.
Okay, so actually, before we go into trivia, sort of an offshoot of this segment, I added some other stuff like most all-time home runs by a Dodger versus the Braves, and this could be home or road, and it goes back to 1913, although looking at the list, given that home runs were so scarce before 1913, I'm certain this is also the all-time list. Would you have a guess as to what Dodger has the most? My fear to start this thing doing this list was that if I did like an all-time thing, it's just going to be like the all-time, basically what the all-time Dodger list is. You know, like,
right.
If you, what was it? So, almost. So that's why I'm sort of asking, is it's a close, close thing.
Eric Kara still leads the Dodgers, right?
But he leads the LA Dodgers.
Ah, okay. So I'll still guess Eric Kara.
But here's the deal with that. Not even close. He only has 11 home runs against the Braves in his career, which is 26th, tied for 24th all time.
Interesting.
And so You gotta go back to remember in like the before expansion when there was eight teams
That's
per league.
a great point. Yeah,
everyone like it, it's one thing that you know these guys played in the same division as the, and they played 18 times a year for so many years. But then if you go back even further in the 50s and 40s and before, they played 22 times a year. So a lot of these are going to be those older guys, and so basically like your boys of summer type, any of those guys. But so Duke Snyder's the all-time Dodger home run leader.
He was my next guess. So I feel good
about
that.
He's second with 49.
Okay.
So and to give you a hint, he played 263 games against the Braves. The leader in 293 games against the Braves was Snyder's longtime teammate and first baseman Gil Hodges. With 50, so only one more, and then no one else. Like Roy Campanella is next with 34, so those two are far and away the leader. I just thought that was a little interesting side note. I just wanted to check, just to make sure. But then the reason I brought that up is I also did something with we talked a little bit about the home opener, and there was the really nice ceremony for Vin Scully, where Al Michaels was there, and he was sort of introducing. Like Scully's career, I guess, you know, like going through various moments in Scully's career, great calls he had. And he starts talking about, Scully calling Hank Aaron's like all time, breaking the all time home run record. And my first thought was, oh my God, they got Hank Aaron to come here. That's awesome. And then like, oh, okay. He's on video. That makes more sense. Like, but then I thought the most weird thing in the whole pregame ceremony, and the man who gave it up, Al Downing, everybody. And then they introduced Al Downing, who, you know, was a good pitcher as a Dodger. He was fine. I just thought it was funny, like, that they included him in the ceremony because he gave up that home run. And he was a perfectly fine, you know, Dodgers pitcher, you know, and had a fine MLB career. I just thought that was a funny moment. But it made me look up another Play Index thing. How many – I did a game finder for him. So as a Dodger in Atlanta, home runs he gave up. He – 7 starts as a Dodger. The Dodgers won the first 4 of those. And then the 5th start was the Hank Aaron game. He lost that game, and the Dodgers lost the last 3. Downing as a pitcher was 2-2 in his 7 starts in Atlanta as a Dodger, but he gave up 7 total home runs in those 7 starts. So I wanted to look that up to see if he was necessarily homer prone. So I just thought that was a little funny side bit from the home opener. But there's your Al Downing homer moment of the day. So let's move on to questions.
We only got a few, but we got one from Nico, and it's a great question. Name one food item you would add to the Dodger Stadium's current offerings.
Oh, man, I saw this, and I was planning to, like, sort of think about this and try to really come up with a good one, but I think people have mentioned this. I know they have a few, healthier food options. I would like, maybe I can't really say what I would add, but like something along that line, maybe like, I mean, salad is a hard thing to eat at a ballpark, you know, if you're going to like have something with a fork, at your seat, but it's still something that could be done. Or maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that's like a different alternative than like, some of your standard sort of ballpark fare. So I can't come up with something specific, but I think something like a better selection of salads or wraps or something like that. I think that would be my sort of, my guess. Or maybe, you know, maybe they could add like a, and it's not necessarily healthy, but like it's different, is like a Jamba Juice type thing where you could get a smoothie.
Not really healthy for what it's worth.
No, that's what I mean. I just went off the rail a little bit there, just thinking as an option, you know. So I don't know, but it's a good question. I really don't know. I haven't thought about like what else, you know, would you want to get at the stadium. But do you have any ideas?
So the healthy option is a good idea. I was actually on a like 1 week super diet, and I had to go to a I got to go to a Dodger game, and it was miserable trying to something to eat.
Because there's like one section, right? There's like one one stand basically where you get. So I think that's the thing. Maybe you just offer that at more places. But
I think I ended up getting a Fiesta dog and just like not eating the bun. It was really goofy
and
not pleasant. So I just came back from a trip to Albuquerque, and I did not get the green chili pizza, as you recommended. I got the green chili dog.
Okay,
and,
well,
I don't care if this is a New Mexico staple. They Dodgers should steal it. It was delicious.
Perfect amount of heat. Yeah. Just have like a regular concession stand that's like the green chili stand, and everything you offer, just add green chili to it. And then that's that stand, you know? So maybe that's the solution. Go back to their Albuquerque roots somehow, even though they're AAA's in Oklahoma City. Or embrace Oklahoma City and have some sort of like a barbecue stand. Like, you know, they have the barbecue stand out left, so there's that. But I mean, I don't know. I'm just making up stuff as I go here, but we're just spitballing. But
and clearly, the ideal solution answer to this question is that they build the largest In-N-Out of all time. That it takes up half of reserved food section just to be able to feed everyone who would eat it. But
you can actually smell it at any point in the park.
Yep, exactly.
Like, oh my goodness, that'd be amazing. Wow. You know what? You're a winner. You have come up with the best solution to date. When someone actually hits two straight doubles, they could be literally sponsored by Double Double by In-N-Out. That's amazing.
Well, thank you, Nico. And then we'll finish up with some questions from Craig. Hi, Eric and Jacob. Good homestand, and now an upcoming 2 weeks where you hope the Dodgers can continue their winning ways. Here are the questions. The Dodgers did not hit a home run off Javier Lopez ever until their 147th plate appearance last Saturday. That was the most plate appearances without a home run against an active pitcher until Seager's blast. My trivia question to Eric, name the pitcher who faced the most Dodger batters and never gave up a home run. And I have the answer, so I'll let you think about that as we go through the other questions, okay?
Holy cow. Okay, yeah, let's go to the other ones.
Yeah, if you thought I was embarrassing, good luck with this. If you have prime rib or meatloaf, the only examples I can think of, do you ever ask for the end cut? That's the first part of this question. Yes.
Yes. I definitely.
It's delicious.
Yeah, definitely. I like the end. If charred or like for meatloaf, if it's the same thing, it could be a little crispy. It's wonderful. Yeah, either one.
Second part of this question, if you offered the choice between roast beef, ham, or turkey at a carving station, which do you normally choose?
Probably at a carving station. Probably turkey. Although I don't know, like. Saying carving station makes it sound fancy, so like I would say I'd probably choose roast beef in that scenario. But if it's just like a standard fare, like let's say if the carving station was a, like, not to disparage it, but a Boston Market level carving station, I'd probably go turkey. But if it's like a higher end carving station, I'd say roast beef.
So I'm thinking, when I hear carving station, I'm thinking I'm at like a buffet, like a Vegas buffet. And if that's the case, I'm assuming I have access to really good mac and cheese somewhere. So I'm going ham, because the ham mac and cheese combo is just
one
of my all-time
solid
favorites.
Well, and yeah, anytime you can mix pork with that, like you have, because you know bacon and mac and cheese is a great combo. So any type of pork mixture with mac and cheese is going to be pretty excellent. So good call.
In 1978, I really wanted to see Say, Garvey, Smith, and Baker hit at Fenway Park, but that was not to be. Is there an opponent's ballpark where you think the current team would be fun to watch play a World Series? We've got a question similar to this, and I'm going to use my same cheaty answer, which is Kauffman Stadium would be an amazing place to have a World Series with the Dodgers.
I would also like Kauffman Stadium because I could stay at my friend's house, presumably.
Who's that?
Even if it's on his floor. And we might be able to record a podcast at said location.
Also, so, delicious no, barbecue access.
That's true. Now, okay, so the current one for me would be I've also at various times I wanted to see the Dodgers in Fenway, but that's not the current choice. I think I would say Toronto. That's just a weird park to me, and I just think they would hit the crap out of the ball there, and it'd be a fun series. The one growing up, I wanted to really see them in, and I'm trying to think the year that it probably could have come the closest was maybe 80, not 87, because maybe 88. I don't remember how the Tigers did, but they were sort of contending around those years. But I don't think they ever did in the same season. But I wanted to see the Dodgers play badly at Tiger Stadium. That would have been pretty sweet. which it was like that overhang in the outfield and the upper deck there. I wanted them to play there pretty badly. But, yeah, never did get to see that.
You know, and I've actually been there, but we want to go weird stadium, Tropicana.
Oh,
that's a weird stadium.
Can you imagine the Andrew Friedman playing against his old team? Good Lord.
And destroying them in the process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Last question from Craig. Game of Thrones starts next Sunday. I believe Jacob is a fan. I am. And we'll watch it that day. I will. Is there a show for Eric and another for Jacob that you will watch the night the show airs on television?
Now, I guess the last couple for me were I generally don't watch TV like this anymore, so it's I'm really reliant on the DVR. I'm usually like a day after person or depending on the day. But for me, Better Call Saul falls into that category right now. That said, I did watch last night's episode today. But I just remember in spring training. There was an issue. I did end up watching some episodes on demand, like a day after, using the, like, I have Time Warner Cable, so I used like the app on my iPad and I watched them on demand. But there was some concern that I wouldn't be able to, so I was very cognizant of trying to watch that as it came on in my hotel room, which did not have DVR. So I was very, very trying very hard to watch those the night they happened. But yeah, like Mad Men was a show like that for me. Same with the People versus O.J. Simpson, which is now over. That was an amazing 10-parter. I think those for me. I've never seen Game of Thrones. I know you're into it, but any others besides that for you?
Side note, I have a t-shirt coming from my favorite house of Game of Thrones, and I'm very excited for it. So yeah, the answer to this was no for a long, long, long time. And then while I'm working from home these days, and I like putting on sort of random crime procedurals that I can kind of tune out on throughout the day while I work. And although one that has kind of transcended that was Person of Interest, which is a fantastic television show. And its last half season is coming on a few weeks, I think, early May. So that, I will probably be watching that.
That has my man Jim Caviezel, right?
It does.
Okay. And Ben from Lost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Never seen it.
Should. I think you would like it. I think you would like it.
Yeah. Do you ever watch Criminal Minds? I know that gets a pretty good run on syndication
both
right now.
Criminal Minds and NCIS film extensively in Santa Clarita, where I grew up in. And I do watch both, and it's really eerie. You know, they'll be in what's supposed to be Quantico or, you know, Oklahoma.
Yeah,
be at the bowling alley that I grew up in. It's just like,
Those classic Quantico bowling scenes.
And I went to College of the Canyons for community college, and they use it for... It was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy. It's been used as a high school extensively. It's been used as hoity-toity. Yeah, it's always weird seeing that. But anyway, do you have an answer to this trivia question?
Oh, before we move on to that,
Someone's stalling.
No, it was for Criminal Minds. I'm probably like two seasons behind on it, but like I was watching, my cousin was watching it for a while, and so I'd watch it with them, and I got to really enjoy it, and so even watching some of the older episodes. But like my favorite part about it was I sort of came up with like a theme song in my head. So like any time it would start, I'd be like, Criminal Minds, you know. So I can't like see that show without singing that in my head now, and it makes the show like that much more enjoyable. But yeah, okay. So the trivia question, I'm guessing it may be a reliever and someone. Man, that's such a tough question. I know Trevor Hoffman. They got him late. I don't know if they ever got him early. I'm just gonna just pull out a guess and say John Franco.
The answer, and I'm looking at the answer is Randy Tomlin.
Damn it! All
right. How did you not guess that?
Yeah, that's shameful. I know. Yeah, we would have had like 30 guesses. I probably wouldn't have got that.
Well, that's the show.
Sweet. Well, so we have all these new segments now. You guys are just chock full of information. So thanks for listening, and send us questions either on Twitter at TrueBlueLA or Jacob Burch, B-U-R-C-H, or send us email at tblapodcast@gmail.com. If you have a Dodger-related play next question you want me to look up, feel free to tweet or email us that suggestion, and be happy to do it. But until next week, we'll talk to you later.